I now call the Chancellor of the Exchequer to make a statement. Jeremy Hunt.
Welcome to the Tax Factor Spring Budget Special from Blick Rothenberg, the tax, accounting and business advisory firm. This week with Nimesh Shah and Heather Self.
I'm Nimesh Shah and welcome to The Tax Factor, the top tax podcast from Blick Rothenberg that keeps you up to date on all things tax. We've reached 30 episodes of The Tax Factor. Happy birthday to us. And to celebrate, the Chancellor, Jeremy Hunt, kindly arranged a budget to give us lots to talk about. So joining me for this special spring budget episode of The Tax Factor is my tax colleague, Heather Self. Heather, welcome back to The Tax Factor. So I'm going to put you on the spot. In one word, describe the budget.
Interesting. Which is not necessarily a good word. I've always said that if I was Chancellor, my slogan would be making tax boring. I think we get too many changes too often in the tax system.
And I think interesting is an interesting word, Heather, because I think we got more than what we were expecting under the backdrop of a general election year, some poor data on the economy as well. So we got a few surprises from Jeremy Hunt. But just talk a little bit about what the Chancellor had to play with, because it hasn't been all that rosy since the autumn statement, has it?
No, although you'd never think it to hear him speak. His self-imposed fiscal rule is to show that debt is falling in 5 years' time. And there seemed to be quite a lot of creative arithmetic to make sure that no matter what the short-term numbers are, it'll all be fine in the long term. I think a question following today is, when do we think the election will be? I've been saying for a long time that they might cut and run in May. It sounds to me now as if, like most other people have been saying, we really are looking at October, November. He kept saying, oh, we're turning a corner. So I think they're hoping that the measures they've announced today and also the general economic situation will be good enough to give them a bit of a boost by the autumn.
I think that's absolutely right, Heather. I've always expected, actually, a autumn general election here to give them one more throw of the dice, an autumn statement to give away some more money back to the electorate. And the economic data hasn't been great. The UK fallen into a technical recession, albeit it's probably out of it already now. Interest rates are still pretty high, and the Bank of England isn't suggesting that they're going to come down anytime soon. And inflation, whilst it has come down quite dramatically, it's been stuck at 4%. I think Sunak and Hunt would like to see inflation definitely come down to 2%. I think the Labour opposition, though, would have definitely liked an election in May. They were talking only this week to say that they felt that this budget would signal a May general election. I think that was more wishful thinking on Labour's part. So big picture stuff from the budget, Heather. Something that you predicted would happen here around national insurance and income tax. So what did the Chancellor have to say for himself?
Well, we had a bit of a debate on last week's Tax Factor. You were saying you thought he might go for 2 pence off income tax. And I said I thought national insurance was more likely. And it was national insurance. I think for two reasons. Firstly, it's easier to show it specifically coming through in pay packets quite quickly because national insurance is charged on a period by period basis rather than being spread over the year. And it's also quite a bit cheaper because it doesn't apply to pensioners and it's only on earned income. What I did think was noticeable was that he's done it for employees and the self-employed again. I wonder whether it might have been better to do employers' national insurance, because I think that's what helps create jobs if employers can see that the extra cost of taking on somebody isn't as much as it might have been.
Yeah, national insurance is come down quite dramatically, actually. If we just think back to 22, when we had this thing called the Health and Social Care Levy, if we remember that far back, a lot's happened in tax since then. But national insurance was 13.25%. It was reduced down to 12 when they got rid of the 1.25% surcharge. And then Jeremy Hunt cut it in January down to 10. And now it's going to be 8. And also for self-employed, as you say, Heather, it's gone down from 8 to 6. So I think that's quite generous here. And I did a bit of post-budget maths. And with national insurance, I suppose with any tax, actually the people that benefit more are the higher earners. So someone earning £20,000 is only going to be better off by £260 a year. Someone earning £50,000 is going to be better off by over £1,300 a year. If you compare that actually to when we started this journey of reducing national insurance at the autumn statement, someone earning £50,000 is now almost £2,000 better off because of those national insurance cuts that we've seen only over the last 6 months. Now, I think that's quite a lot of money and that's incredibly generous. But I think the Chancellor desperately wanted to do an income tax cut if he could have done that. But why do we think he didn't go and pull the trigger on income tax?
I think it's just the cost, the national insurance cut is coming in at about 10 billion a year for 2 pence off national insurance. I think if it was income tax, it would be more like 13. And he's pretty tight on his headroom. He's got something like 8 billion of headroom in 5 years' time. That's really almost a rounding error. He couldn't have afforded another 3 billion a year.
Yeah. And speaking of fiscal headroom, he had to spend it wisely. The big headline grabber, definitely national insurance, 10 billion, big, big numbers. But as has become tradition, and as Melissa covered last week, fuel duty as well. And I think that's a big number.
That's about 3 billion next year. That's because he's extended his so-called temporary 5 pence cut for another year. Whether in a year's time anyone will bring it back on, who knows? But forecourt prices now, certainly locally to me, they're just over 140 pence a litre. I can remember when they were getting well up towards £2 a litre. He could really have put that 5 pence on, and perhaps that would have given him room for his income tax cut. Who knows?
When will we ever see that fuel duty freeze cancelled? Which chancellor, which government are going to be brave enough to reinstate that 5p temporary freeze and also the freezing of the fuel duty just generally?
I think it's when they start getting serious about electric cars and we really get the shift, because fuel duty should disappear as we all switch over to electric cars. There's got to be quite a big shift in the tax burden generally. Perhaps they're going to let fuel duty wither away and start taxing electric cars more. Who knows? But that's definitely not for this chancellor.
And there was lots of digs at Labour from this chancellor. He said, my pledge to freeze fuel duty again is that we are the party that backs motorists, referencing also the Labour mayor's pledge around the extended ULEZ charge as well. That's got a lot of attention. But the other dig that Jeremy Hunt had was that he felt that the Labour Party didn't support households and families. And there was a welcome move from the chancellor on the high income child benefit charge. We've talked about that in pretty much every episode of the 30 episodes of The Tax Factor. And I remember you, Heather, on the BBC talking about the high income child benefit charge was introduced in 2013. There's been no changes since, but we got a change today. What was all that about?
I think it's the first time I've ever actually made an accurate budget prediction. If you listen back to last week's Tax Factor, I said I just wonder whether he might increase the limit from 50,000 to 60,000 or even 70. And sure enough, the lower limit has gone up to 60,000 and the top of the taper is now 80,000. Although both of those are not as much as they would have been if he'd just increased them by inflation since 2013. I had a look at the Bank of England calculator, which incidentally gives you inflation back to the year 1209 if you want to do some historical research. But the limit of 50,000 in 2013 would be 67 if it had just gone up by inflation, and the upper limit of 60 would be 80. So he's more or less brought it back in line with what inflation requires, but that's very welcome. I think that's reflecting that he's perhaps targeting these people in their 30s and 40s who are in reasonable middle management roles and who are starting to be affected by the freezing of the tax allowances, which hasn't changed, but affected by the freezing of the high income child benefit charge limit, possibly coming into higher rate tax if they're a bit further up the scale. And as you say, they're the people who are really going to benefit from the national insurance cut. So I think he's aiming at the 30 somethings in this budget. There's nothing there for pensioners. Nothing at all. And in fact, they're getting quite grumpy about having to pay tax on their state pension.
And he certainly, I agree with you completely, Heather, that there was a targeted measure here around families, middle earners, but also Martin Lewis of moneysavingexpert.com fame. I think he had a hand to play in the reforms to high income child benefit charge, but he also threw his 2 pence in to say that the high income child benefit testing should be on a household basis rather than an individual basis. And the Chancellor went and listened to Martin Lewis, didn't he?
Sadly, yes. I mean, clearly Martin Lewis has never actually worked in tax, because the tax system since 1990 has been on an independent basis. When I first got married, my husband had to do my tax return, which in some respects was great, but please, let's not muddle up going back to a household benefit for taxation. Much better just to have child benefit as a universal benefit, but make it taxable, which I've been saying for 10 years now. I'll keep saying it. Perhaps the next chancellor will listen to me.
Yeah, and this measure is subject to consultation. It's going to take 2 years, I believe, before it is enacted, if it's enacted. And I think there's a big data push that HMRC are going to have to make this actually work in practice. I think there's a lot to iron out here. But I do agree with the Martin Lewis principle that this should be tested on a household basis. There are anomalies in the high income child benefit charge, lots of anomalies. But one of them is that a couple that is earning £49,990 each will not lose their child benefit, but one earner under the old rules earning £60,000, that household loses it completely. So I can see where Martin Lewis is coming from, but I can also agree completely with you, Heather, that we're moving away then from that notion of independent taxation. Let's have a think about property. So a budget really doesn't go by without there being something on property. And there's actually quite a bit on property in this budget, wasn't there? Albeit some quite small things.
So there were three things that I spotted. The first was capital gains tax. We speculated that capital gains tax might go up. In fact, it's come down for certain things. So sales of property, the higher rate was 28%. It's coming down to 24%. Interestingly, the other things that he's done, he's abolished furnished holiday lettings relief from 2025. And he's also abolished the multiple dwellings relief for stamp duty. So capital gains tax is coming down, but furnished holiday lettings is going, which is going to be a tax increase for some people, and stamp duty is coming up for some people. So in the short term, I think there's going to be a lot of different pressures of people either wanting to delay an exchange of contracts for a few weeks to get the lower rate of capital gains tax, but get completion before the 1st of June in order to get the stamp duty relief. Going to be a bit messy, I think, for a few weeks.
Yeah, there's lots of moving parts there, isn't there, with property. I have to say, I was dismayed listening to the budget at this point, where Jeremy Hunt said he's going to reduce capital gains tax on residential property from 28 to 24. If I've got this right, I think we've now got five different capital gains tax rates for individuals: 0%, 10%, 20%, 24% now, and then still the 28% for private equity executives who are receiving carried interest gains. Now, that is just a bonkers system to have so many capital gains tax rates. I don't know why he just didn't go the full way and say, we'll make it 20. Why 24? Can you shed any light on it, Heather?
I think it's just what works with the arithmetic in terms of how much it's going to cost. He did talk about predictions as to this cut in the rate is apparently going to bring in more tax. There's always supposed to be a sweet spot as to the rate that apparently brings in the maximum revenue. And he seems to think he's found it.
Yeah. And just, I suppose, recapping on holiday homeowners and furnished holiday lets, that's a relatively small measure. I don't think it will affect too many people. It's expected to raise about £300 million. And apparently from reducing those rules. But as you say, I think there will be a scramble to sell some of those FHLs that do benefit from a 10% capital gains tax rate, because they do qualify, provided you've met the conditions for business asset disposal relief. The stamp duty move was interesting, I thought, for me. Some ambulance chasers around there looking at homes that have so-called annexes or garden rooms that could be classified as a dwelling. That's all going from the 1st of June. So a simplification to the SDLT rules. But our stamp duty partner, Sean Randall, he was also looking a bit glum that actually there will be big house builders and housing associations that are going to be really impacted by that move on stamp duty land tax, multiple dwellings relief going as well. We've talked about property, we've talked about households and families. Let's talk about businesses. There's lots for businesses, wasn't there, Heather, or not?
Not really. Certainly nothing much for our key clients who tend to be sort of mid-sized entrepreneurial businesses. For smaller businesses, the VAT threshold has gone up from 85,000 to 90,000. That's a bit of a sop, really, to the one-man band business, where you hear tales of plumbers stopping work in January, February because they don't want to exceed the VAT threshold. But it's really a relatively small measure. There was nothing there on either rates of tax. There was a bit on business rates, but really nothing that's going to help the business with 8, 10, 20 employees.
Yeah. And I suppose Jeremy Hunt may point back to the full expensing regime being the big glossy measure that was helping businesses. But actually, that doesn't benefit lots of entrepreneurial businesses as well. They pay a lower rate of corporation tax.
That really benefits the bigger businesses, because, of course, all businesses get £1 million of annual investment allowance. There's only about 5% of businesses that spend more than that, and they're the ones that benefit from the full expensing.
And finally, then, non-DOMs. This is my area of interest, and I've been following it very closely for many, many years, the 20 years that I've been in practice. I've seen lots and lots of changes in non-DOMs in my time. But wow, this was the most dramatic reform of non-DOMs I've seen in my time, and I think in a generation as well. So Jeremy Hunt really stole the Labour thunder. Labour had said that they were going to abolish the non-DOM regime. This was going to pay for 7,500 doctors and nurses and 10,000 nurses and midwives for the NHS. It was going to raise apparently about £3 billion under the Labour proposals. Well, actually, Jeremy Hunt pulled the rug right from Keir Starmer's, right underneath from Keir Starmer and Rachel Reeves, and he's stolen that idea. And the non-DOM regime will be no more law from the 6th of April 2025. It's going to be replaced with a residency-based regime. So someone coming to the UK will have 4 years of complete tax exemption on their overseas income and gains. Helpfully, though, they can bring all of their money into the UK. I've acted for lots of non-doms over the years. One of the big frustrations is that they can't bring their overseas income and gains to spend in the UK at restaurants and hotels and even buying property. But that's all being abolished, and the days of bank account segregation is also going as a result of that. But 4 years is actually a really short period of time. The current time frame for a non-dom to benefit is 15 years, and prior to 2017 there was an unlimited time frame as well. This really is a significant rewrite of the non-dom rules, and I have to say I didn't see this one coming until about a week ago, when one of the newspapers had led with the story that this was being seriously considered by Jeremy Hunt and Rishi Sunak. Clearly, lots of work has been going on around non-dom reform for some time, and they've managed to keep it under their hats. And I was surprised at the extent that Jeremy Hunt and Rishi Sunak went on the non-dom regime. I think they may have shot themselves slightly in the foot by having such a short period. I was expecting it would have been closer to 10 years. 4 years feels quite short, but I suppose it gives scope for a future government to increase that time frame fairly easily if they felt there was benefit in doing so. But for me, clearly, the measure was 100% tactical. Jeremy Hunt said not that long ago, I think around the time that he came in as Chancellor, to say they have no intentions of abolishing the non-dom regime. It apparently adds $8 billion to the UK economy. And so to make this move, I think there will be some quite aggrieved non-dom Tory backers out there, especially with some of the rules on trust changing. I think there's going to be quite a lot of pain for existing non-doms already in the country over the next 12 months. As is always the case with a budget, devil is in the detail. I don't think anyone's sick of us saying that. And we will see more consultations around the inheritance tax treatment of non-doms in the forthcoming weeks and months, as well as some of the legislation, how this will operate in practice. But I think it's going to keep us very, very busy over the next couple of years. Non-doms will be looking to either restructure their affairs or potentially force themselves out of the country for a good period of time, because some of these measures will impact non-doms quite adversely, having had quite a generous regime up until now. And before we go, Heather, we said at the start that we don't think that an election now is likely until the autumn. We've been surprised before, but let's assume that it is. We are going to have an autumn statement from Jeremy Hunt and Rishi Sunak. Actually, it may not be Jeremy Hunt. I heard rumours that Claire Coutinho is waiting in the wings as the first female chancellor. Let's see what happens there. But if this government does stay in power until the autumn statement, what would you like to see in there? Or what do you think the government may do in advance of an election?
I'm less convinced that we'd get an autumn statement. I think we might get an autumn election, but not an autumn statement, because autumn statements in the last couple of years have been right at the end of November, even early December. If we're going for an election, you have about 6 weeks between calling an election and actually going for it. They're not going to have an election in January. Surely even Sunak isn't going to hang on till the real bitter end. So I'm not convinced there'll be time for an autumn statement as well. I think this is Jeremy Hunt's final word, but we shall see.
Interesting final comments, Heather. I have to say I'm the eternal optimist and hopeful that we will see another Sunak Hunt autumn statement. I think they'd like to give away some more money in tax cuts. That golden income tax cut, which they desperately wanted to do this time round, I think that's up for grabs if they can squeeze an autumn statement in. But I can see exactly where you're coming from. Maybe it will be in the autumn rather than in the winter, which has traditionally been the case as well. We will wait and see. It's going to go into overdrive over the next 6 months. As the election season is truly ramped up following yesterday's budget, I'm really looking forward to seeing those manifestos as well, especially in light of what Jeremy Hunt and Rishi Sunak had to do today and really steal some of that Labour thunder. That is all that we have time for today on this spring budget special of The Tax Factor. If you want more information and detail on the Chancellor's statement, Blick Rothenberg has a comprehensive spring budget hub, which is updated with insights and analysis from our team of experts and features our famous tax calculator, so you can see if you are better or worse off, visit the Blick Rothenberg website and follow the links on the homepage.
The Tax Factor is back next week with Rob Goodley and Rihanna Earle, where I'm sure the budget conversation will continue as the finer details come to light. Who knows, this might turn into an omni-shambles budget after all.
Thanks to Heather for joining me this week and taking us through the detail of the spring budget. It's always great to hear Heather's expert analysis. I'm Nimesh Shah, and until next week, thanks for listening and goodbye.
I commend this statement to the House.
That's the Tax Factor. We'd like to thank you for making us one of the UK's top 20 podcasts. Find all our previous episodes wherever you get your podcasts. And join us again next time on The Tax Factor.